In the early days, in the 60s, the kind of baking ovens. Yeah.
Was a lot of it manhandled or woman-handled?
There were quite a lot of conveyor belts. Now, for instance, we had the ovens on the ground floor, pretty well opposite Anger Street. If you went inside the walls, the ovens would be there, six of them in a row. Three of them went uphill. And what happens then, when the biscuits went up the ovens, they went through a series of conveyors, which were called cooling conveyors, because you have a certain percentage of cooling. The biscuits was red hot, so it had to be cooled before it was packed. So it went to these long cooling conveyors, and then those cooling conveyors eventually turned back and turned into and became part of the wrapping section. So then you had a huge number of these conveyors. Then the women took the stuff off the conveyors by hand and took sort of stacks of, say, 20 biscuits. Now, if I pick up 20 biscuits, they go all over the floor. These girls were brilliant. They could pick up 20 biscuits and place it in the little slot where the paper was. The paper would be wrapped around it, and then the machine would take it and it would sort of seal the edges, and then it would seal the ends and put glue and stuff like that, and then put around the end paper so the thing was finally sealed. But they took the biscuits off that and placed them in the wrapping machine. Years later, they developed machines to do that. But in the early days, it was done, of course, everything was done by hand.
Was there great skill involved?
Huge skills involved. And the women, they were underestimated considerably. I would say not by their managers, but in general, people just thought, oh, there's a woman, she's just doing some old job or other. They were highly skilled women. They were brilliant. And again, they had a great sense of humour. They always, Katie was chatting to Louis beside her, and they were doing the job. So their fingers were doing one thing, and their brains and the social part of them was doing something else. So it was magnificent to see them in action. I was very impressed all the time.
And so they'd keep up a conversation at the same time that they would work away. And how some of these women, do you remember their names?
Don't, because you see, there were so many of them. And yeah. I was sort of a blow-in. I came from an office, came down to fix some machine or modify some machine, did something. They were all chattering around the place. They kept throwing an eye at me as long as they didn't do anything significant. And then off I went again.
Are you going to tell me how they got the figs into the fig roll?
I'm sorry. If I told you, I'd have to shoot you. We used to say there was no manual intervention. We had three monkeys. I spent a lot of time around the fig roll area, I can tell you. And it is a very difficult... what happened was we had sort of a... I remember doing a design for a huge big tower thing. Okay, and you went up the top of this tower, and into that came the sort of the figs, and they were mixed in a great big sort of thing, like a cement mixer, you know, like a kitchen mixer, except it's about 4 feet across, like a cement mixer. And then syrup was poured in on top of that, came in a pipe, and it was again from somewhere else like that. And so the whole thing sort of mixed together into a sort of slurry, and then those bits of old biscuits and bits of the previous mix or something, whatever was left over was always put back in again. It was perfectly okay, and that was acceptable as part of the mix. But so this thing then had to be pumped, extruded out through like a long thing, like a mincing machine, out of which this came. And I tell you one thing, it's like pumping glue with bits of brick in. It's a very difficult thing, and the machines used to break down, and we had to sort of solve problems and change the consistency and all the sort of stuff like that. So this is one of the things that all the time there were snags, and snags had to be earned out because the amount of biscuits we made always amazed me. I remember standing beside the cream cracker machine, which is about 3'6" wide, and seeing this. The cream crackers were made in a large sheet, and they only sort of snapped into squares later on at the very end. But this sheet of cream crackers came down the hill to me and was travelling at about 20 miles an hour. Now, if you had the full of Croke Park sitting on the ground eating these things, they wouldn't be able to cope. So I was just amazed. I thought to myself, the number of biscuits we make, where do they go? You know, it just amazed me that they were able to sell all the biscuits that they made.
What always fascinated me was the design, the covers, the wrapping, the presentation. And who was behind the designing and the manufacture or the making of this?
Well, there was usually the sales department had a guy who was involved in the design, but he didn't actually do the design. He would commission the design. And it was usually designed from companies in England who would print large rolls of this design, and these rolls would come over to Ireland, and then they'd be cut up and stuck onto the top of them. But The design was fantastic because looking back now, when I was recently associated with the archive removal from Talla, because Talla, the lease was up, and Douglas Appleyard, who was the company archivist, but he was also involved in this, and he had a whole lot of these old, dating back to the 1900s. Around the 1920s, the design was brilliant. They had sort of little girls and men and so on, so in period costume almost, and then I don't know what it is, but the design was brilliant. The shape, the way it was laid out, the attractiveness, it would catch your eye. And I thought, these are works of art. They're only stuck on biscuit tins, but they are actually works of art. Commercial art, okay, but still works of art.
And so they came in, did they?
Oh, they came in. They always came in. Yeah. And they had a picture of some sort. They had the name, of course, and they had the logo. And the Jacobs logo changed about 10 times over the years. It started off, and it was sort of a roundy thing, and then at one stage, you might remember in the 60s, there was a thing like a guy standing with the trumpet.
Yeah.
A trumpeter, and he had this sort of thing hanging down at the trumpet with Jacobs, and then there was another one which turned into sort of a lozenge shape, and then there was a square one, and then there was a sort of an oval shaped one, and every so often they used to change the design of the logo, which I thought was a bad idea, because when I look back at something like Ford, the design that you see on the Ford car is the same as you see on the front of the Model T. So there's a sort of continuity there. The Sony name is there since the 1950s. The same lettering is exactly here. So, excuse me, I think it was a mistake to change the logo this time because you sort of introduced an element of old and new.
Yes, indeed. But that was management decision.
Oh, absolutely. We weren't.
Weren't involved, yeah. There were so many people working for Jacobs in the early days. Now, when
I joined, I think there's something like 3,000 people were working. It was like a town, and the thing about it is, it was a huge site. Luckily, in my particular job, I was able to go around from place to place. If you were in one place, you came in, you worked, and you went home. Our particular job meant you could go anywhere. Now, the site was so big. Even in Talla now, I remember after 40 years service, you got a cutlass biscuit barrel with a sort of top on it. And every so often there was a ceremony for 40 years people, you know, half a dozen people. And somebody come in and shake your hand and give you this thing. And I remember meeting two guys who I'd never seen before in my life. And they were in the warehouse for about 40 years. And I had been somewhere else around the place before and never met the guys, you know. And in fact, it was very funny too, because somebody said to me, when you get that biscuit barrel, for God's sake, don't let them engrave your name on it. Why not? Say, you'll never be able to pawn it. So my name is on it and I haven't pawned it.